Good morning, DFW. It is Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan, 9 o'clock hour, Football Friday. I'm RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt.
Peyton
and Caitlin alongside. People are resounding saying I did say Peyton earlier.
I told you you did.
Well, you know what? That's their new name.
Nobody listens to me. Nobody listens.
I have Philip and Preston and all the names in the book.
He needs Peyton is better than Pepe.
When you said when you proposed to Mackenzie and you were like, "Would you do the honor of taking my name?" Did she go, "Which one?"
Yeah,
because you guys call her.
Would you prefer to be called Pepe or Preston?
Pepe. A lot of Tolos call me Pepe. I'm fine with it. I've been
Preston Russell.
I'm going with Peyton. Your name is now Peyton.
Okay. I do like Peyton.
You guys just combined
like Brangelina. Or something like that.
Sarah and I, we're Sarjay.
No, you're not.
Yes.
No, you're Sarjay. That's a good one. You're trying.
That's what we go by. We go by Sarjay.
I do like the idea of Choppyman. Are you actually going to consider that?
Not a chance.
Why not?
I'm famous.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I can't change my
name. She has lemonade, though. Oh, no, that's Country Time.
Yeah.
I forgot that.
Well done. Well done. All right, let's hook you up with some money, boys and girls.
All right, so we are dominating this year. We were 3-2 in the NFL last week, 2-1 in college.
And that puts us, Bobby Belt, at 87-56 on the year.
Woo!
Pretty good. I have to say, that is an unsustainable mark that we will not hit next year.
Very Chiefs-like.
It's just a number that we have, we've really done well. We've really done well. This year, lately, and it's okay not to bet these games, right? If you see a line that you don't like, it's okay to say no. I'm not betting.
That is what Twolo Andy did when he won his parlay thanks to you, and then he brought you the Tennessee cutting board.
Yeah,
Twolo Andy removed one of your picks that was in there, where he was just like, "I'm not feeling that one," but he hit with the rest.
Even if you don't use my picks and you use your own, like. If you're going through a game, it's okay not to bet the game. It's totally fine. Like, you don't have to bet every game. There are some people out there like, if it's a game on TV, I've got to bet it. Okay. You don't have to.
That's what Vegas is thinking with why they're allowing even Oklahoma to be on the board with none of their roster.
There you go. Okay, so I got three college selections for you. I like Georgia minus the 1.5. They have been downgraded 4 points from Carson Beck. Here's the thing. Carson Beck was never Tom Brady.
No, Carson Beck actually in some big games had some trouble this year.
I don't think this is going to be as big of a drop-off as people think. I mean, Carson Beck is a stable player, but Georgia's quarterbacks in general have never been like the dominant driving force.
Hey, that's the line I've been using about Georgia is they're the only team in the country who their quarterback's a role player.
They're the only team, at least in this thing, right?
In terms of big-time contender. Right. Other teams have it. But in terms of big-time contender, their quarterback is role player.
Like Arizona, I don't consider Arizona State and Boise State a big-time contender.
No.
But everybody else certainly is a role player.
Oregon, Dylan Gabriel is a big part.
Will Howard was great the other day. Jennings with SMU was great all year. Drew Aller's not a role player. Nico's not a role player. Quinn is not a role player. You go on and on and on.
But Carson Beck is, in essence, kind of like just, that's icing on top.
Yep, kind of a role player. I like Texas minus the 13.5 against Arizona State. Arizona State is going to rely on Cam Scataboo, and I don't think that's going to work out well for them.
Hasn't that line's come down, though, some, hasn't it?
That
started at, I thought, 14.5.
It did. I think it did start at 14.5. I think you can get it. Let me look at it real quick, because I saw it last night. At 13.5, that's when I took it. But you know, right now, yeah,
so there's some action.
13.5.
Look, and Texas has had some issues this year covering in games where they're heavily favored. So that wouldn't surprise me if they didn't cover, but they're clearly better than Arizona State.
I hope you got Ohio State at -1 when it opened. It's -2.5. The money is coming in on Ohio State. I like Ohio State -2.5.
I will, if I could bet, I would bet every single thing I had on Oregon.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Now, the reason Oregon's been downgraded, their defensive metrics have been terrible. You can run on them right now.
And look, I understand when you're talking about what you do in terms of with gambling and different things like that, you can't just basically say, oh, well, I'm going off of a gut feeling necessarily. Right. But like it's deeper than that. When you look at the way Dylan Gabriel plays in big games. That's one of the reasons why I stay away from Penn State and Drew Aller.
Yeah.
Drew Aller consistently has not performed well in big games.
Right.
Dylan Gabriel's the opposite. Dylan Gabriel elevates in a way that none of these other quarterbacks do. His best games this year have always been in the big games, and Ohio State routinely, Oregon and Michigan, they lose. Those are the teams Ryan Day loses to.
Yeah, you're right. That's
so
true.
That's a little bit, I know it's not something that you can extrapolate necessarily and say, oh, that's a hard and fast rule, but it just feels like too consistent an issue for me to just
ignore.
Well,
I'll tell you this. I don't care what the Penn State numbers say. I'm not betting on James Franklin in a big game.
Yeah.
Period.
Sure.
I had Buffalo on here in the NFL originally. I took that off. I don't know that I trust the Bills minus 8.5, 9 points right now.
Yeah, they've played some close games.
And the Jets have, in their last five games, have been decided by a grand total of like 15 points, too. It's like, it's kind of crazy.
Rodgers is playing better.
I like the Dallas Philly under 39.
Did you have that initially, or did you add it when you realized it was a rain game?
I had over initially, but then when the Hurts news kind of came in, I was like, all right, rain game, backup quarterbacks, give me the under 39. I like Cleveland, Miami under 39.5.
It's good.
And I like Detroit minus 3.5 at San Francisco. This is a. You remember how when we came in with Detroit thinking that they are going to pull every trick play out and they are going to try to embarrass the Cowboys? They are going to do the same thing to San Francisco. They are going to try to embarrass the hell out of San Fran.
Yeah.
After what happened last year in the playoffs. So
100%.
There you go. There's your degenerates on my Twitter at RJ Choppy.
Look at that. Very, very good, RJ Choppy. All right. We got a couple of minutes left here in this segment. I wanted to talk about something here with Chop. And this is something we've been saving for a little bit. But I figured this was a good time to do it now as we're talking about the CFP and looking ahead to some different things. But Sports Business Journal had a really interesting piece up a couple weeks ago where they were studying just different things with the transfer portal. And specifically, there was a group, AD Advisors is what it's called. It's a collegiate consulting firm headed up by former Auburn AD Jay Jacobs. Ari Fleischer is in there. Peyton Russell, who's Ari Fleischer?
He is a head coach or former head coach.
Almost.
For Alabama.
Nailed it. Ring yourself up.
Oh, let's go.
Former Alabama head coach Ari Fleischer, Carlette Patterson, and Jeff Holbrook.
Hang on. Hey, you have no idea. You really don't.
No, I know.
He was George W. Bush's press secretary.
Yes, he was the initial one.
Like, oh, 2000-ish.
Yeah, the original one. But Ari Fleischer's in there, Carlette Patterson, Jeff Holbrook. I was going to let it go if you were going to let it go.
So, I didn't want people to think that we thought Ari Fleischer was an Alabama head coach.
I think they caught on. They studied 800 portal entrants going back to 2020 to 2021 that season.
So what is Ari Fleischer doing now? He's just doing this study?
I guess he does. I'm guessing this is just related to research, but he may be a big football guy. Condoleezza Rice is. There's a lot of football people that was in that 2000 to 2008
the George
Bush administration.
W. Bush office.
They loved football.
Who's into Texas high school football?
I guess that's what it is. But what they found was that 60% of portal entrants transferred down, and 10% were not picked up at all.
Okay, so you're at Alabama, you transfer, and you don't go necessarily to Auburn. You go to Ball State.
Yeah, or potentially even still something like maybe you go from Alabama to some like Arizona State.
They consider that transferring down?
I believe they do in this. But even if it's not that, if it's just transferred down, that's an even more insane number. Here's the question.
Yeah, because I would think transfer down would be like power four to group of five.
When you look at those numbers and it revealing that it's not just for top tier programs, 60% of it must be because it says FBS football players actually transfer to smaller schools. When you look at that and the fact that they go down towards a lower level, and we're talking about big-time college football programs, is this proof that the transfer portal is actually working exactly as it should? Or does it show the exact opposite? So when you see these numbers, does that say, okay, players are recruited to big-time programs, they're ending up at smaller programs when they transfer, that's a win for the portal. That's showing that smaller programs are getting access to these players that they wouldn't get normally. Or is it the flip where big programs are finding out who can play, who can't? You can't. You're not getting an opportunity here. You can't. You're not getting enough to. You can. Okay, you're going to play here. Do they figure out which ones can't play, cast off the ones that can't, and smaller programs get the scraps behind, and then these bigger programs walk in and they pluck the real talent from the portal? So, and you go pick a small school's lone legit talent, and you get traded off three cast-offs who were not, you know, were once big high school recruits, but didn't turn out to be that.
So what I think is happening is a couple things. One, you're going to get some schools and some players that have players that they say, hey, you're not cutting it. You need to change. You know, you need to go move somewhere else. And then you have players that are unhappy where they are genuinely good because of whatever reason, it's a bad fit. They transfer and they go to a school that is on the same level. And then you have the other kids. I think this is where a lot of it's coming in. My assumption is a lot of these kids are being told by their friends and family or by themselves, you're better than this. You need to leave. You need to go get some more money. You're worth X. They go into the portal and nothing is there for them.
Yeah.
They don't know. They don't recognize what they really are. And I think if you're, let's say you're at Texas A&M and you're not getting playing time and you're like, man, I'm so much better than this. I go anywhere I want. And you put yourself in the portal and you end up at Rice. Nothing wrong with Rice.
Sure.
But you're not a Power Five school anymore, right? Yep. You're a Group of Five now. Or you end up at Tulane or Memphis. Again, nothing wrong, but you're going down a notch. Whereas A&M might not have told you you got to leave. They might have been totally fine with you playing again. They liked you. They just didn't have a spot for you at that moment. But you couldn't wait. And I think a lot of that is the problem. I think a lot of that's happening. That's a lot of the 60%.
No, I think that's a good point. I look at it and I go, okay, let's take, for example, and these are not the smallest schools, but let's just take a look at, for instance, I'm looking at the portal rankings right now. And individual players, not just team rankings, the number one team ranked in the portal right now, which, by the way, there's still time for other people to go in there and commit and change this up. But do you know who is ranked number one in the portal rankings right now for teams?
In terms of improvement?
In terms of, according to 24/7 Sports points tally, based on, is it a four-star transfer, a five, not from high school, what they're grading them as now.
Oklahoma?
Nope.
Okay.
Close, geographically.
Oklahoma State?
No. It's in the state of Texas.
Texas Tech.
SMU.
It's Peyton Russell's Texas Tech Red Raiders. Like, the fact that Tech right now has collected seven of the four-star recruits.
Wow.
In the portal. Is that something where it's like, okay, that shows that it's working?
What it shows is, like, you know, it's like if you're a program, all these programs have money, and you have spots open, and you could sell to a player. Let's say you sell to a quarterback. Hey, look, we got a quarterback spot open for you here, man. That's what Oklahoma did with Mateer.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, we got, you know, we don't have Arnold's gone. He's transferring. You know, we don't have a spot. And we don't have a starter that's like set in stone. Come on.
Well, and look, you take a Connor Wegman, who there's obviously discussion about.
He's in the portal.
Well, and he's going to Houston. So, like, that's an example of it working. But then you look at other things here, Chop. Look in the top 25, for instance, of the recruiting rankings. One of these players that Tech collected was the eighth-ranked portal transfer, according to 24/7 Sports. And that's an offensive lineman, Hunter Zambrano. Hunter Zambrano's leaving Illinois State. So Illinois State, do they look at it and they say, okay, well, that's not working out for us, though, because we found somebody.
Yeah.
We identified a guy who could play, and what we got back was nothing. We lose Hunter Zambrano, who's our top guy, one of the top portal transfer guys, and he goes to Tech. He leaves us. That doesn't benefit us. Meanwhile, what do we have incoming? Okay, we've got a tight end, Caleb Schmitz, from Cincinnati.
Saw my guy Dalton Knecht at Tennessee last year in basketball. He was at Northern Colorado, transfers, and he finishes second in the player of the year.
I'm just
like, how does that happen?
Let's run through the actual
small
yeah. Let's run through the list of just players real quick as we wrap up this segment. I'm just curious if you say this player is transferring to a bigger program or not. Mateer going Washington State to OU. It's a bigger program.
Bigger program.
The number two in these are 24/7's rankings. Edge rusher Patrick Payton going from Florida State to LSU.
On the level.
Similar, but LSU, I think, is
better. They're better suited.
Florida State's spiraling.
Yeah.
Eric Singleton, wide receiver, third-ranked recruit. He's going from Georgia Tech to Auburn.
Yep, up.
Zachariah Branch from SC has not announced yet. Deuce Robinson, wide receiver, fifth-ranked recruit, SC to Florida State.
That's down.
Six, quarterback from Florida State, Luke Cromanhook. He's going from Florida State to Mississippi State.
That's down.
And then Prince Will, man, I'm not even going to try on that last name, edge rusher, Nebraska to Ole Miss.
That's up.
So this is still a lot of SEC collection. So when they're trying to point to, look, it's working, we're getting smaller programs loaded up with this talent they wouldn't normally have. It's like, on the surface, it kind of looks like that. But is it really that you just figured out who can't play?
Yeah, so these kids are trying to...
And they're casting them off.
These players, their goal is to get to the SEC or the Big Ten, probably. And that's what they're looking to do. And not even just to the... And they're looking to go from, you know, in tiers of the SEC or tiers of the Big Ten. Like,
yeah,
you know, leaving Nebraska to go to Ole Miss. All right, you're switching conferences. The conference on the same tier, but you're going up in a chance to make the college football playoff.
100%.
Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, joins the show next on The Fan. It is time for Nick Eatman of DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys, to join us here on 105.3 The Fan. I'm Sean and RJ. I'm RJ Choppy, Bobby Belt, Peyton and Caitlin, or Peyton, if you want to call it that, hopefully together alongside here on The Fan. Good morning, Nick. How are we doing?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. Never
wonderful.
Better.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Did you enjoy the last four primetime NFL games that were decided by a total of 85 points?
I don't think I enjoyed them because I don't know if honestly, two of them I forgot were on. Third one I said no thanks. and then I just kind of kept seeing the score. Are you counting last night's game?
Yeah, so it was Green Bay, New Orleans was 34-0, and then the two Christmas Day games were a total of 60-12, and then last night was very high scoring, 6-3 game. You took the over 9.5, you lost.
Well, you mentioned right there the 34-0, and then a couple weeks ago we had Rams 49ers where nobody scored a touchdown. So it's been great games, great set of games. We're gonna get a better game this weekend, right, Nick? We'll get a better game there in Philly.
I think you'll get a better game. Yeah, you'll get a better game. I don't think it'll be a 34-0, and I think there'll be a touchdown. So I think it'll be somewhere in between the Packers and the Saints game and then last night's game.
Perfect.
But we'll see how the weather might affect this. I know the Cowboys were working on, the tight ends were working on, you know, the wet ball drill, you know, in practice yesterday. So we'll see. We'll see if the rain kind of makes it a sloppy game.
Are they expecting it to be like just wet or a downpour?
From what I've seen, it's just like it's in the forecast like all day. So I don't know if it's going to be thunderstorm or anything like that. The last thing we need is lighting delays here for this game. I mean, they've already moved it to noon. We all appreciate that, but we don't need to be sitting there waiting, hour and a half, 2 hours to get the game in.
Nick, CeeDee Lamb is now shut down for the season. His year is complete. And I think overall, a solid year just with all the things that have gone on around him and being banged up and playing as well as he did late. With him down these last two games and them out of the playoffs, who's stepping in and taking the majority of that work? Or who do you really want to see? Is this a Flournoy opportunity? Is this something where you want to see what Mingo can do? Or is this, we're doing Tolbert and Cooks and rolling with that?
Well, I think it's, that's the thing about receivers. You can do all of that. I mean, you can stay in there with Tolbert and Cooks as well to, provide a little bit of, I don't know about downfield threat because they don't really, use them down the field like they should. But, maybe across the field is kind of his play. But Flannoy and Mingo, I mean, those are the two, you mentioned them, and those are the two that I think that they want to see. I think we all want to see. And, if you're going to get anything out of this trade for Mingo, then you need to give him some reps here early and try to work with rapport. It's kind of hard to say that because he's probably not working with the quarterback that you would expect next year with Dak and all that, but still he needs more reps, he needs some confidence, and he needs a pass kind of in his direction where he can actually catch it. I mean, nobody gets worse balls thrown to him than him, especially here in Dallas. He hasn't gotten one, you know, that he could really catch.
Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, joining us here on 105 through the Fan. Nick, how much of these final two games for you are about evaluations for certain guys in terms of are you back here next year, whether it be pending free agents like Osa and Dowdle and Golston, or just, hey, show us something here at the end, Jalen Tolbert. How much of these final two games is evaluation for 2025?
You know, I think a lot of it, you know, the hay's in the barn for the most part, you know. I mean, just because it does kind of – you do kind of get the feel that hey, I don't know about white flag, but it's like, all right, you know, with the CD news and just like – you just kind of get the feeling that, all right, it's been a good run. And maybe this is what McCarthy likes. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, I've got some success. Things are going kind of, you know, looking upward here. And now, hey, we're shutting it down for Philly, and who knows about Washington and all that. I mean, I'm not saying they're not trying to win, but I think the evaluation part is just – it's individual, but I still don't think that you know, one or two guys is going to do something one way or another that would change their mind. You know, the only thing that could happen is, you know, guys like – you know, a guy like Golston goes out and gets 2.5 sacks, or maybe a huge rushing day for Dowdle. That raises the price tag a little bit. But I think the Cowboys probably know what they like, who they want to bring back. And at this point, those guys can kind of raise their own tag.
Nick Eatman joining us here, 105 through the Fan. Bobby had given the stat to McCarthy that they're 12-5 in their last 17 games with a backup quarterback. How are they, like, seriously, that doesn't happen around the rest of the league. How are they able to do this?
Well, I think they have a good backup quarterback. You know, I think, and he understands the play caller understands him. So it's good continuity there. And you know, he understands the receivers. He's just been here. And so that's part of it. But I do think that they play. I think it's worked out well when the defense has been pretty good to really good when Cooper Rush has been in there. Now, the first couple of weeks when after Dak's injury, Micah was slowly kind of getting back into it. He didn't have his conditioning right. The defense wasn't humming like it is now. And, I, you know, obviously they struggled. But I think that Cooper Rush has benefited from a defense that's been able to kind of pick him up at times. But, you know, he picks his spots. He's not too greedy. He makes solid plays. And they can win some complimentary football because when he's been in there, the defense has been really good. Special teams has always been, you know, better than good. And I think that's what's helped. But I'm not trying to take anything away from Cooper Rush. I mean, he is a good, solid backup quarterback. And he plays within himself. And it's just kind of worked.
Nick, when you look at the fact that they did start playing better when it seems like the worst of these injuries hit, and that they started to kind of coalesce around this patchwork offensive line and, you know, Rico Dowdle being named the starter and different things like that. Is the number one job this offseason or the number one agenda item potentially this offseason, if Mike McCarthy's back, for them to say, all right, we got to figure out why when these investments we had and these more talented players, quote unquote, that we had out there, why we couldn't put together a team like we did at the back half with patchwork players?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be one of those questions that you ask, you know, and this whole season is a head scratcher. I mean, you know, when you look at just what they've done, and I think they have tied for the fifth best record on the road in the league. I mean, they're 5-2 on the road. I mean, like, what does that make sense at all? I mean, I think the Bills are 5-3, you know, and they're going to, you know, they're one of the top teams in the league. So I just think it's hard to put your finger on all this, but one thing I think that needs to happen here is everybody knows the price tag that Dak has. Everyone knows that. And yes, you got to try to build around him, but you know, it's okay to give him help in the running game. It's okay to say, hey, we can run the football. We're a better team if we do that. And I think with Cooper Rush, they're totally fine doing it. But for some reason with Dak, it's like, no, 3rd and 4, like, or 3rd and 3, like you've got to throw this, or you've got to pass on every down here. Instead of saying, let's play smart football, let's run out the clock. And I think that they it's okay to do that with Dak. And I'd like for them to kind of give them a little bit more help and a little bit more of a mindset change to say it's okay to run the football, even though your quarterback makes $60 million a year.
Nick, I saw on ESPN, Bill Barnwell ranked the potential head coaching vacancies. And he did not have the Cowboys on here, which, I mean, I'm much higher than 50% now that Mike returns. Right. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I think I'm in that, you know, I'm 65%, you know, coming back. And that's why I think it's, I'm not saying that McCarthy did this or it's his decision or anything like that. But I think now we've seen, okay, that they played well last few games. Yes. And then we're going to see, I think, some players not play in this game, CD included, of course. We'll see some others that I think it'll kind of like, all right, Eagles, Washington, you know, these games don't really count. You know what I mean? Like, I have a feeling that that's going to be the narrative here, that, all right, we did well, now we're done. So I think that all that being said, like, the evaluation part should be kind of over from that standpoint, and I think that he's coming back. That's just what I believe. And you know what? That doesn't even make sense coming out of my mouth. I hope that makes sense to you guys. But you know what I'm trying to say?
No, I totally get what you're saying. So, okay. So you're leaning. Right. Yeah, because the idea of being, if you're going to rest players, Mike McCarthy's not necessarily resting players if he's still trying to try out for his job, essentially.
Right, right.
So here's I guess the follow up then. If you're at 65% McCarthy returns, what is your percentage right now that McCarthy returns as the play caller?
Yeah, now that one, I think this isn't just an injury season. Okay, this isn't a season just because of injury. There's been problems. We know that. I'm not trying to spark a debate with Bobby again or anything like that. But I actually called you the other day, Bobby, because they played the highlights on the later show. Called it the Beltdown.
Oh, yeah, the Beltdown. Yeah. Sean gave me that nickname for whenever I lose my mind.
Yeah, and so I kind of wanted to get a little bit more context about it because I was like, interesting. But but anyway, we don't have to do that now. But basically, I mean, I think what I'm saying is that they need to have some tweaks to this. Yes, there's been injuries, but the Saints game still sits there. Yeah. There was a problem with the Saints game. Everybody was there. Everyone was healthy, and they got torched by a team that's not good at all. So what are the problems here and how do you fix it? And I think the play caller, I'd like to see a change there, at least a change in the structure of the offense and how that's all done. Something's got to change here. You can't just keep coming back and saying, all right, we'll be good once we're healthy because injuries happen, players get older. It's going to happen. You've got to be able to fix that. And so I'm probably less than 50% on that.
Nick, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy the game.
All right, guys. See you later.
Yeah, and I'll call and explain on my drive to Fort Worth, Nick, about my Beltdown.
I'd like to hear about it. Thank you.
Nick Eatman joining us here on 105.3 The Fan. All right, it is Crosstalk with the KNC Mashbys. They are at Buffalo Wild Wings in Fort Worth.
Oh, baby.
Right near Montgomery Plaza off 7th. That is coming up next here on 105.3 The Fan.
What does this button do?
Good morning, guys. Just want to give a shout out to Peyton Russell. He can take great calls, unlike Alex Medford.
Okay, am I hearing this right? The morning show is letting Peyton Russell have his own segment?
I just don't get it. We've known Peyton for years. He's horrible on the mic. I mean, gathering the foreigners, this is going to be a train wreck.
Daddy does work, and Peyton just does board hopping.
That is right. It is not Thursday for the payload. It is a Friday payload crosstalk edition. No Mike Bassick here, but I have Chris Arnold and the zero-time Hall of Famer, Alec Medford. No point majors today, but guys,
hey, but the two of us combined for three. That's all that matters.
Where are
the
you guys today?
Two of us combined for three.
That's a good one.
Where are you guys today?
Where are you guys?
We are out here in Fort Worth, Left Bank, 629 Staten Street, at Buffalo Wild Wings for the Friday football feast.
And for those who don't know, this is 7th Street area.
It is.
West Fort Worth, yep. Right across Trinity River. Well, this is where the party people hang out.
Right by Montgomery Plaza, baby.
Here you go.
I think West 7th might be the area of DFW where I've gotten myself into the most trouble in my life.
A lot of Same. Trouble happens.
Like over time, Same. Like just cumulatively, if you were just to say, what geographically would we say is where you've gotten into the most trouble, it'd be right around there.
It's a fair bet.
I could say the same for myself, too.
Yeah, this is a spot.
Yeah, I passed by some of the bars, and they started talking to me like the Green Goblin mask. But, you know, I was able to make it here in one piece, and we're going to have some fun with some $4 Miller and Coors Lights out here at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, baby.
Alec, what do you have coming up on the program today?
We do have the owner and general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, at 10:30 today, plus everybody's favorite segment, AM on the FM, at 1 o'clock.
Oh, is that everybody's favorite? I mean, it's my favorite.
Fine.
But
I love it. I think it's great.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks, Chop.
Dang, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think it's very good, especially when you bring up Gorbachev.
you're going to make Alec kill you. That's what you're going to have.
Alec is not the most likely to set the building on fire up here.
I feel like I would be the least likely.
No, yeah. It's another redhead.
It's Carter, for sure.
Oh,
it is. Carter.
I mean, it is. Let's be honest. Carter would probably tell
you
that.
That's only after an Oklahoma game.
Yeah, if the OU loses, he's off.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Now you've got me wondering about that hierarchy of most likely to do that.
Ooh.
Because who's after that?
Bassick.
Ooh, yeah. Mike is up there.
Yeah, because he would just sit there and watch it burn.
Yeah, he's running out of time, though.
You know who's number one on this? It would be Blake. Because Blake would be, like, playing with a lighter and not have any clue that, like,
be
like
fire. Yes, it would be by total accident.
Fire, is that dangerous?
Flammable?
Is that dangerous?
Wait, I can't pour gasoline across the whole studio and then set it on fire. You're telling me I can't do that. There's no way. I've never heard that in my life.
I've never known that, the fire to burn somebody.
Never heard of that.
Bobby, back to you. I'll let you take over here.
Okay. That's us.
Peyton is out of material. Ten minutes left.
What a give up. That's so pathetic.
Wow.
All right. So, guys, we were kicking around a topic earlier today as I go ahead and take over Crosstalk because Peyton just couldn't fill a whole segment.
What a mail-in.
I'm like AM on the FM at what time today, Alec?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. All right. That'll be a full 15 minutes, I think, there. All right. So, no, we were kicking around this topic of the Cowboys clearly have gotten to a point where they're really good at talent acquisition. So if you look at since 2015, I've been kind of researching this during the breaks today. They have the second most Pro Bowl selections in the NFL behind only Baltimore. Baltimore's got 58 and Dallas has 56. So they're right there with them in terms of the most Pro Bowl selections over the last decade. But we're talking about why with all this talent, Dak, CD, DeMarcus Lawrence, Micah Parsons, Jake Ferguson, Tyler Guyton, Zach Martin, like all these different guys that were playing, that when they went out, you started to play better with lesser talent. And it brought up the idea of, is Dallas just good at talent acquisition and doesn't actually know how to build a team?
No, I think because there's no payoff of a Super Bowl, that's what a lot of people feel like. You know, it's like you got all this talent, but where are the results? How come you can't get out of the first round? I think what did them in this season, and you saw what they somewhat can do when the players that were Pro Bowlers got hurt, was this. To start the season, you had a new defensive coordinator. They were learning the new defense with guys who were acquired at the end of spring or at the end of training camps.
Sure.
On top, so you had to learn this defense. In other words, what shocked the system to everybody was how bad the defense was after winning all these 16 games in a row at home. It's like, wait a minute, this is not the way the Cowboys play. They don't give these kind of points like that. And guess what? It affected. It affected Mike McCarthy's play calling because he's used. What do they would always do? They would defer first, and then they come down and march on up and down the field. You follow where we're going with this?
Yeah.
So Mike McCarthy, who last year, not this season right here, but the year before, led the Cowboys offense to a top five offensive rating, led the Dak Prescott to second to MVP in voting, number one in touchdowns. This is Mike McCarthy's offense with him calling the plays, including all the bad calls that he makes, right, and all the mismanagement of the game clock and the whole nine yards. They overcame all of that last year with a 12-5 record with him calling them plays instead of Kellen Moore. But guess what he didn't do? He didn't do an adjustment where the offense was going to have to carry the defense for a little while. What had happened, and people forget about this, and I bring it up all the time, Dan Quinn's takeaway defense shortened the field for the offense.
Yeah.
They were stealing points. And not only that, the defense was also getting pick six. Remember a couple of years ago, Bobby and RJ, when Dak and Tank had a bet in the end of December, which team's going to score the most touchdowns, the defense or the offense? That's how potent the defense used to be. Instead, we had to watch Mike McCarthy's defense learn his system. And then the injuries happened, and guess what? The backups learned the system.
I think there is a little bit of Brooklyn Nets there, you know, a little Phoenix Suns, to where you know how to find the right pieces, you know how to get the talent, but when you get the talent, like, what does it matter if you don't know what to do with it? I think there is a little bit to that, but to CA's point, some of the turnover with the staff hasn't necessarily helped the personnel, and then I think in general, they have whiffed on some of the personnel too. So I think there is a fair balance of both, but yeah, it's an interesting point, and I kind of do get some like NBA super team vibes where it's like, well, you got the pieces, now what? I kind of see it.
Did you guys hear the Zach Ertz Nick Sirianni story?
Yes.
No. Okay, let's play this for CA really quick. This is a little bit of a longer cut, but I want to get y'all's thoughts on if this matters, or if this is another example of just how easily things could fall apart with Philadelphia, or if this is a no big deal. This is Jeff McClain from the Philadelphia Inquirer this week, and this blew up yesterday, talking about an interaction that Nick Sirianni had with former Eagles tight end and current Commanders tight end Zach Ertz after the game this weekend.
The bad blood was on display during the game and after. Oddly enough, between Sirianni and former Eagles tight end Zach Ertz. The two had to be separated during post-game handshake. Sirianni didn't have much to say about it after the game.
What was the nature of the interaction with Zach Ertz after the game? It looked like he was pretty...
Congrats, both of us say congrats to each other.
Ertz told an Inquirer reporter, I'll let him comment on what was said. To me, we just exchanged holiday pleasantries and kept it moving. But according to sources close to the incident, here's what really happened. Ertz went to shake Sirianni's hand, could tell the coach was agitated, so instead gave him a high five. Sirianni didn't like the intensity of Ertz's hand slap and mocked him because he had only one catch and told him he essentially did nothing to contribute to the Commanders' win. Ertz took exception and got in Sirianni's face, but the coach's escort, as always, Dom DeSandro, jumped in and held Ertz back and ushered a defeated Sirianni to the tunnel. Sirianni later called Ertz and apologized over a Zoom conference call, sources said. The former Eagles tight end played for the coach in his first year in Philadelphia before getting traded to the Cardinals midseason. Publicly, Ertz and Sirianni were complimentary of each other after their short stint together in 2021.
Why is this guy so insane?
Zach Ertz, I know.
I'm talking about your boy, Nick Sirianni. This dude is... he is the potential biggest detriment to them winning a Super Bowl.
He's insane because he has Big Dom and he can be.
I guess it's Big Dom, which, by the way, the whole clip, if you go back, and there's not a great shot of the clip itself of them interacting, but when you go look at it, Big Dom's only in the vicinity because he's getting in FaceTime for a hug and a handshake with Dan Quinn. Like, Big Dom is this cult personality.
People seem to love him. Everybody seems to love him. They really do.
Which, and look, I mean, as soon as he was off the sideline last year, it really did fall apart. Must be Nick Sirianni's sane handler.
He has to be, because he was like, apparently he was there in a heartbeat, and he got in the middle. He's like, dude, get out, and he walked him away.
Is that the biggest threat potentially to the Eagles' title? Is just Nick Sirianni's and Philadelphia in general, their combustibility with the locker room?
Yes, 1,000%. Because their head coach, the man that is supposed to be keeping some sort of resemblance of professionalism and like competitive nature in a respectable way, he's the biggest loser on the team. He thinks he is the face of the team. No, the face of the team is the guys that go out there and do all the scoring for you. Like, and at this point, I don't even know what he really does that benefits the team, because I feel like Kellen Moore has done more for that offense. I feel like his defense has really stepped up for him because his GM is so damn good at drafting that he just said, huh, let's take every Georgia Bulldog that we can get our hands on and make that work.
Facts.
Like, it feels like everybody else is carrying the water for him while he's just a glorified cheerleader, and he doesn't know how to get out of his own way and out of his team's own way. And that's the reason why people can't respect that franchise even outside of the NFC East fandoms. He's such a loser, and he's going to get himself in so much trouble if he doesn't stop.
I tell you this, the only city it works is Philadelphia. And the reason why is because that's the population of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And that's why when he got into it with the fans, it was like, yeah. He would not survive any other city in the NFL.
He'd survive, maybe New York. He'd survive in New York. But like,
I don't know.
You know, like, but maybe not with the Giants. They're too buttoned up. The Jets are just enough of a train wreck. But, I mean, that's like, you're right, Chris. I mean, like, he takes on, like, he is perfect for the city.
He's perfect for
the
city.
He takes on the emotions and the mm-hmm. personality of the fans.
I mean, he was getting into it with Jalen Hurts to start the season. Remember yeah. that? They uh-huh. weren't speaking in the summer.
All right, y'all are at Buffalo Wild Wings off just off of by Montgomery Plaza, 629 Staten Street. Bobby's going to make his way out there.
I am.
And I'll be out there a little bit later. I got a funeral to go to. I'll be out there after that, though. And, we'll come say hi.
Condolences.
We'll come say hi. All right, it is the KNC Mashby without K or C. Next.